got, for example, the water, and he was back. I mean, the bags of water were filled. He was martyred, you know, and his arms were cut off on the way back, you know.
Exactly.
When got in the water. That's
so there are some other narrations, because yes. of the time of the program, I'm not able to share all the narrations. For me, it seems that, I mean, having studied all these narrations, it seems that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, in few cases at least, or at least in one case, he asked the enemy for water. Mm-hmm. But is it against the dignity of the Imam?
Sorry, before getting to the dignity, because the family with the Imam, so it is something natural to ask for the water for the children.
Exactly.
Or something like that, okay?
Exactly. Of course, again, there is a dispute in case of Ali ibn al-Asghar.
Yes.
Because some people believe that Imam Hussein alayhi salam took him before the enemy just to ask the enemy to give him water.
Water, that's right.
For this case, it seems that we do not have an authentic narration for this case. The narrations are there that
yes.
the Imam took the baby
yes.
that is called Ali ibn al-Asghar, according to some narrations. He was in the arms of the Imam Hussein alayhi salam, but it's not an authentic narration that in that case, in that occasion, Imam asked for water for that baby. It's not well authenticated.
That's right.
And of course, the rest of the story is true, that then an arrow was shot and Ali ibn al-Asghar was martyred.
Yes.
But whether Imam Hussein alayhi salam asked for water for that special case,
okay.
it is not according to an authentic narration.
That's all right.
But now...
Is it against dignity of the Imam or
the
not?
The point is that, no, it's not against the dignity of the Imam. At least there are three philosophies for that. Before going to these philosophies, I mean, as you rightly mentioned, at the end of the day, we are talking about human beings. I mean, mm-hmm. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, because some people think that Imam Hussein alayhi salam was supernatural person, meaning that he didn't feel the thirst. No, Imam was suffering from that.
Yes.
All the companions, all the family members were suffering from that. Otherwise, there is no reward for that. So for sure, Imam Hussein alayhi salam was suffering. His family members were suffering. And it's very natural in this case to ask for water yes. if this is not an act of showing humiliation.
Up to an extent, they were thirsty. I think it is documented that Imam al-Hussein puts his ring on the tongue of Ali al-Akbar,
according
isn't it?
To some notions, yeah.
yeah, to quench the thirst
exactly.
of Ali al-Akbar and says, father and son, you know, how thirsty you are, quench your thirst with the ring stone.
Exactly, a miracle done by the Imam, according to some notions.
Yes.
So one, there's three philosophers. One point is that it is a kind of, completing the hujjah, the proof against the enemy.
Yes.
The point is that because some people later could say that, or on the day of judgment might say that Imam did not ask us for any help,
mm-hmm.
because the same question is asked, why did the Imam ask for help?
Yes.
We have it in many stations that the Imam asked some people to join his caravan. What was the reason? Is it against the dignity of the Imam? No. Imam wanted to complete the argument, because otherwise the people later could say that the Imam did not ask for any help or for water. Otherwise, we would have helped the Imam or would have given
yes.
him water. So this is one point. The second point is that this is a kind of, this is an act of Imam to make the tragedy of Karbala an immortal event.
Mm-hmm.
We have talked about this point, that this is a very special event in the whole history of mankind. And the fact that the Imam is asking for water, but he's not given any water, it
yes.
is, one of the sad pages of the tragedy
yes.
of Karbala.
Yes.
So this is another, might be another philosophy why Imam Hussein alayhi salam asked for water. And the third point, which is very considerable, is the fact that Imam alayhi salam is the manifestation of the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
There is no doubt about that. And we see and we read in the narrations that till the last moment of his life, Imam was thinking of the fate and destiny of the enemies too.
Yes.
And he was giving advice to the people.
Guiding the people
guiding
to the right
people.
Path. That's right.
So according to some scholars, one of the reasons for this istisqa was that maybe Imam Ali Salam founded a way to guide some people.
Yes.
When Imam is asking for water, at least it was likely for some people just to be touched. Just to be touched, that this is the son of the Prophet. He is asking us for even water, and we are not giving him water.
To make them conscious of the...
Exactly. And that might be a way for some people to at least be away from the army of Umar ibn Sa'd, which happened, practically speaking. Although not many people joined the army of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, we have the case of Hur ibn Yazid Yahya and few other people who joined the army of Imam Hussein alayhi salam from the army of the enemy army. But we have other people who did not join the Imam, but they left the army of Umar ibn Sa'd. This is, according to the many historical reports. So the third philosophy that may think of is that at least we may think of it as a possible philosophy. Imam did that so that it might be, a way for some people to change their destiny, their fate, to join the Imam, or at least to be away from the army of the Umar ibn Sa'd.
And showing the true face of the enemy, the Yazid as the ruler. All Muslims, look who is the ruler of the Muslims, such deviated people who is, really, really sad story. And these aspects of the story, the tragedy of Karbala has been reiterated and remembered to see that how the enemies of the grandson of Prophet Muhammad did cruelty and atrocity, not only towards him and his companions, but his family members, the women, and the children. Thank you, Masheikh, for a nice elaboration regarding Istighasa. It was very kind of you. And thank you, Masheikh, dear listeners, for listening to us. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
In the Limelight. Dr. Luke Kemp, a climate scientist at the University of Cambridge's Centre for the Study of Existential Risk, says there are plenty of reasons to believe climate change could become catastrophic, even at most modest levels of warming. Dr. Luke Kemp added, climate change has played a role in every mass extinction event. It has helped fell empires and shaped history. We now present you an article written by Damien Carrington. The piece is titled Climate Endgame, Risk of Human Extinction Dangerously Underexplored. Climate scientists have warned in an analysis the risk of global societal collapse or human extinction has been dangerously underexplored. They call such a catastrophe the climate endgame. They said, though, it had a small chance of occurring given the uncertainties in future emissions and the climate system, cataclysmic scenarios could not be ruled out. The scientists said, facing a future of accelerating climate change while blind to worst-case scenarios is naive risk management at best, and fatally foolish at worst, adding that there were ample reasons to suspect global heating could result in an apocalyptic disaster. The international team of experts argue the world needs to start preparing for the possibility of the climate endgame. They said analysing the mechanisms for these extreme consequences could help galvanise action, improve resilience, and inform policy. The researchers said explorations in the 1980s of the nuclear winter that would follow a nuclear war spurred public concern and disarmament efforts. The analysis proposes a research agenda, including what they call the four horsemen of the climate endgame: famine, extreme weather, war, and disease. They also called for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, to produce a special report on the issue. They said the IPCC report on the impacts of just 1.5 degrees Celsius of heating drove a groundswell of public concern. Dr. Luke Kemp at the University of Cambridge's Centre for the Study of Existential Risk, who led the analysis, says, "There are plenty of reasons to believe climate change could become catastrophic, even at modest levels of warming. Climate change has played a role in every mass extinction event. It has helped fell empires and shaped history." Dr. Luke Kemp added, "Past disasters are not limited to the direct impacts of high temperatures, such as extreme weather events. Knock-on effects such as financial crisis, conflict, and new disease outbreaks could trigger other calamities." The analysis is published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences and was reviewed by a dozen scientists. It argues that the consequences of global heating beyond 3 degrees Celsius have been under-examined, with few quantitative estimates of the total impacts. Dr. Luke Kemp said, "We know least about the scenarios that matter most." The scientists said a thorough risk assessment would consider how risks spread, interacted and amplified, but had not been attempted. They said, "Yet this is how risk unfolds in the real world. For example, a cyclone destroys electrical infrastructure, leaving a population vulnerable to an ensuing deadly heat wave. The COVID pandemic underlined the need to examine rare but high-impact global risks. Particularly concerning are tipping points where a small rise in global temperature results in a big change in the climate, such as huge carbon emissions from an Amazon rainforest suffering major droughts and fires." They said tipping points could trigger others in a cascade, and some remained little studied, such as an abrupt loss of stratocumulus cloud decks that could cause an additional 8 degrees Celsius of global warming. The researchers warned that climate breakdown could exacerbate or trigger other catastrophic risks, such as international wars or infectious disease pandemics, and worsen existing vulnerabilities, such as poverty, crop failures, and lack of water. The analysis suggests superpowers may one day fight over geoengineering plans to reflect sunlight or the right to emit carbon. The scientists said there is a striking overlap between currently vulnerable states and future areas of extreme warming. If current political fragility does not improve significantly in the coming decades, then a belt of instability with potentially serious ramifications could occur. There were further good reasons to be concerned about the potential of a global climate catastrophe. The scientists said, there are warnings from history. Climate change has played a role in the collapse or transformation of numerous previous societies and in each of the 5 mass extinction events in Earth's history. New modelling in the analysis shows that extreme heat, defined as an annual average temperature of more than 29 degrees Celsius, could affect 2 billion people by 2070 if carbon emissions continued. Qi Hu at Nanjing University in China, who was part of the team, said such temperatures currently affect around 30 million people in the Sahara and in the Gulf Coast, adding, Qi Hu at Nanjing University in China, who was part of the team, said such temperatures currently affect around 30 million people in the Sahara and in the Persian Gulf Coast, adding, by 2070, these temperatures and the social and political consequences will directly affect 2 nuclear powers and 7 maximum containment laboratories housing the most dangerous pathogens. There is serious potential for disastrous knock-on effects. The current trend of greenhouse gas emissions would cause a rise of 2.1 degrees Celsius to 3.9 degrees Celsius by 2100. But if existing pledges of action are fully implemented, the range would be 1.9 degrees to 3 degrees Celsius. Achieving all long-term targets set to date would mean 1.7 degrees Celsius to 2.6 degrees Celsius of warming. The scientists said even these optimistic assumptions lead to dangerous Earth system trajectories. They said temperatures more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels had not been sustained on Earth for more than 2.6 million years, far before the rise of human civilization, which had risen in a narrow climatic envelope over the past 10,000 years. Professor John Rockström at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany says, the more we learn about how our planet functions, the greater the reason for concern. We increasingly understand that our planet is a more sophisticated and fragile organism. We must do the maths of disaster in order to avoid it.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the sacrifices that the Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam presented to establish a life of honor. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano, and today we're going to talk about the sacrifices that the Imam presented to establish a life of honor in Islam. Before anything, I would like to send my sincere condolences for the arrival of the month of Muharram. I would like to send my heartfelt condolences for the commemoration of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Now, the examples of sacrifices that the Imam al-Hussein presented to establish a life of honor in Islam are really astonishing and astounding, because the intellects of the people of the world were shaken by it, and it felt a deep imprint on their hearts. So even those who were slightly perceptive were also affected by it. The most important matter that makes the Imam unique in this is incomparable steadfastness that he displayed in front of terrible events. Because the Imam was armed with a limited patience in such a way that the historians say the crushing powers that were continuously moving towards them, towards the Imam, were welcomed by him with absolute submission to God's will, in such a way that no kind of weakness or, you know, like cowardice was seen in it. And whenever Tragedy's testing patience descended upon him. His lips used to open, and with deep faith, which was the most prominent quality of his personality, he used to say. Now, this is just among the examples that we're talking about, example of the sacrifice that the Imam did in a way, in such a manner that it presented him, it made him to establish a life of honor. He remained respected up to today.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And today we're talking about the sacrifices that the Imam presented, the Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam presented to establish a life of honor. What made him to stand up to today's Islam, up to today? It's something that took place long time ago in the history of Islam, but up to today it's respected. Up to today people are hearing about Hussein. People are respecting Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam. What are the main reasons? What are the sacrifices that this particular personality, a prominent personality, made? Now, Al-Imam Hussein is reported to have said, being in the sight of Almighty Allah has made it easy for us to bear what is befalling us. The wazirs expressing that the faith was that very secret of miracle and eternality in the mission of Hussein, which is lofty example that leaves a school for generations to show them a way and increase its bestowals. So what are we learning from the words of Al-Imam Hussein? That Al-Imam Hussein say that he is in the sight of the Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and that is what has made him to stand against all the challenges he was facing at the times, the challenges of the tyrant rulers, the challenges of the oppression that was realized or it was felt from the tyrant rulers. And this is what me and you and we as the followers of Ahlul Bayt should be doing. We should stand with Allah. We should stay with Allah. We should make Allah be our shield against all the challenges that we're facing in life, against anything that is coming against us in life. And that way, we are going to live the life of Ahlul Bayt, and we are definitely going to be successful and fight against any challenges that are facing us. Thank you so much for listening. Until next episode, I will see you. Fi amanillah. Until next episode, fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Start. Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, my very dear sisters and brothers from all around the world, welcome to another episode of Youth Station. Here we are once more. This is Asma. And with me, I have my very dear friend Zainab.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. How are you, Zainab?
Alhamdulillah, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So, dear listeners, today we're going to talk about the thing which is very much common between all the human beings, which
is crying.
Are you a crying person, Zainab?
Well, what if I tell you we are always constantly in a state of crying? First, we have to understand what is that. Like tears.
Mm-hmm.
Our eyes are producing tears constantly.
That's salty water.
Yeah, that's, I guess, some half a teaspoon in a day. Our eyes produce that. And yes, as you rightly said, it's just water. Most of it is water,
mm-hmm.
but it has some percent of salt. It has some percent of chemicals.
And so much of emotions.
Not always.
Most of the time.
I'll tell you where.
Mm-hmm. But so you have done a research upon tears.
I have read this topic so much because, you know, when Muharram comes in
mm-hmm.
and we see these tearful eyes, tearful people, and then coming out from those gatherings as a least distressed person,
mm-hmm.
it has compelled me to go for research for a number of times. So I have, yes, definitely done a lot of
We're going to make use of whatever you have gone through then.
Yes. So I was saying, first of all, we have tears.
Yeah.
Tears are, most of the percent is water, and then some percent is salt, and some percent are chemicals, and mm-hmm. there are some enzymes which are there to protect you from germs.
Yeah,
so you constantly have tears in your eyes because of the tear glands,
mm-hmm.
and you produce some half a teaspoon of tears in a day just to keep your eyes, you know, you have
the water that keeps your eyeballs healthy.
And interestingly, Asma, it's not just water. When I was just researching on this for mm-hmm. some long time ago, I found that it's not just water. It's some percent of oil as well.
Yes, I've been through that as well.
To keep that, you know, moistness.
And it was very interesting.
Yeah.
Oil.
Otherwise, your eyes will dry up.
Yeah.
The tears will evaporate.
So there's a poem that says, "Tears, idle tears, I know not what they mean. Tears from the depth of some divine despair that gathers in the heart and rises to the eyes."
Wow.
So that is what I know about tears.
Oh, well, that was interesting.
Yeah.
Now these are the normal tears we always
but
have.
Mostly the kind of tears that we as human beings are facing are just these kind of idle tears.
Yeah, which flow from your eyes.
Yes, and they are full of emotions.
You know, we basically have a drainage system for mm-hmm. the flowing of tears.
Yeah.
And that's through nose. You might have experienced.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
When you're crying, mm-hmm. you have a running nose.
Yeah.
Because that's the actual draining system.
Let's put that physical part aside and come to the point that why do we cry?
We cry because of... You mean to say why do we have this overflow of tears that comes out of our eyes?
Yeah.
We have that because of
why suddenly you sit in a place and you remember something sad or something very happy, and then suddenly you feel like your eyes are getting watery.
You put it there, you know. You said, why do we cry? We cry at some situations. Mm-hmm. Either you're very sad.
Yeah.
Or you're very happy.
You're very happy.
Or some dust has just entered your eyes.
Yeah.
Or you're cutting onions.
Yes. So,
well, the most of the thing that we deal with is the sad and emotional tears.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we see most of the times. I mean, we never say like we are always in a state of crying.
Yeah.
And when you're emotional, you kind of per minute release some half a cup of water, half a cup of tears
mm-hmm.
from your eyes. But when you're emotional, hundreds of research have been done which say that the chemicals released with these emotional and sad tears mm-hmm. were quite different than the normal tears.
Yeah.
Allah, Allah, Subhanallah, Allah, Allah, walhamdulillah, Allah, Allah.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Allah, Allah, walhamdulillah, ya Allah.
You can listen to us at parstoday.com/en. If you have any suggestion, our email is englishradio@irib.ir.
Dear listeners, you were listening to Youth Station. We were talking about crying and do not cry upon trivial things. Tears help you, even if they
because
are
tears
of sadness.
Because you're releasing stress.
Yeah.
The chemicals that you release right now were the stress hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, 90% of this is the stress hormones, especially when you're emotional. And where do we see that, Asma?
Mm.
We see that in these gatherings of Muharram.
Yeah, that is very true, yes.
And that's why I think we feel that.
And they are the sort of very special teardrops because, as just you mentioned it earlier, when you come out of those morning sessions, you do not feel like you're depressed or you have cried your eyes out. It just feels like you feel lighter.
Because
like
you have drained out all those stress hormones out of mm-hmm. your body.
I guess that is because those tears are very special and they have rewards behind them.
Yeah. As you need to excrete
mm-hmm.
extra salt, extra water from your body through sweating and other excretory processes, you need mm-hmm. to excrete the stress out of your body.
Do we have idle tears, Zainab? Tears that have got no values in them?
Yes, crocodile tears. We do have. That's something related to your brain. Like you signal your brain something. Mm-hmm. Your heart signals your brain something. You start crying over very non-serious things or like maybe to please someone or to show off and all. That's why they are called.
And sometimes over something very trivial or very little, you cry. That's why we have been recommended in our narrations to whenever we feel crying, we must cry for the sorrows of Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Because those tears are going to be rewarded.
Yeah.
And they are valuable tears. They're not just idle tears. You sit in a corner and you do that, you cry your eyes out, and there's nothing out of it.
You basically are going to extinguish the hellfire over those 3 years. That's true.
So, okay, guys. So we come to this point that tears are necessary. These are the part of our living thing. So as we are living beings, we have to cry, and it happens most of the times. But sometimes crying for worldly things, for trivial things, is not the rightest thing to do. Yes, yeah. It do release the emotion that you have, but you should consider that these tears must have a value. So whenever you're going to cry, as we have been recommended, we have to cry for something valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah, just as I told you,
yeah.
There was a scholar who used to cry in those morning sessions for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So he asked his family to keep that handkerchief that he used to dry out his tears in order to be the witness of whatever he has done in this world. Whatever teardrops he have gathered in that handkerchief in order to witness.
Because he knew that those tears were valuable.
Yeah, and those tears are going to be the witness in the world to come.
Yes, because on that day when we will be shocked, we will be in a state of shock. We won't be able to talk.
Yeah.
Everything around us will be talking.
And also we should consider
that the earth will be witness, our
tears
will be witness.
These teardrops are very special, just as I told you. We have narrations that says how valuable these tears are. We do think that these tears are not just something worldly, just a salty water that comes out of your eyes. These tears contain so much of words inside of them.
Yeah, you know, actually, a believer is wise. It's in Quran. A believer is always wise, choosy, clever. So whenever like you as a female are cooking something at home, you make so many efforts into it.
Yeah.
But with just one intention, you can change that mubah thing, that something that had no value, that was neutral, into a recommended thing, into a mustahab and recommended thing, with just changing the intention while you're cooking.
Like, so it's all about intentions.
It's all about intentions. Like when you're even like, as you said, you are feeling depressed, you want to cry, just cry in the name of Ahlul Bayt, be wise, turn this idle thing into a recommended mustahab.
So we shouldn't let these teardrops
as
be
a believer,
sign of
have to be wise. You have to be wise in every state of your life. You have you can change just level of your actions from neutral level to a recommended level just with the change of intention.
Exactly. Yeah. So these cries are not the sign of weakness. These are actually the sign of strength and power, and one day these are going to be helping us.
Witness.
Yeah, as the witness, they would come.
And not
to help.
Just these tears.
Yeah.
The earth, the place, the country you were staying in.
Every single thing you have touched.
It will speak on that day that this person at this particular time was staying on me, walking on me, and that time he was crying for Ahlul Bayt. So, or what better than this?
Exactly.
And we are in need of such kind of witness on that day.
Of course, yeah. Instead of crying, as I told you, instead of crying for our miseries, we cry for a greater cause that is going to stand for us someday.
Yes.
Nobody can tell you do not cry. It's a permission that God has given you to release your emotions through the channels of your eyes and to cry your eyes out how much you like. But try to do it upon something that is so much great, and do it in a way that is going to be a witness for you. And someday these tears would talk for you, and they would be a help for you. So also, Zainab, we already know about the energy that everything contains, right?
Yeah.
Even those teardrops might have special energies.
They do have.
We talked about it already. It was about the intention.
Yeah. Professor Emoto, a Japanese researcher, did a research on water.
Yeah.
And he would call whatever different names, and he did tremendous research, and then he would find that whatever he would say, the water would attain shapes, the same shapes. You know, water, even if you put physically water in some vessel, it again attains the same shape. Yeah. In the same way, human body, more than 70% of it contains of water. So when you're draining that out emotionally, it is attaining shapes.
Yeah.
It is attaining those beautiful spiritual shapes. Rather than draining your energy, it is providing you energy.
Yeah.
But when it's emotional...
So what you actually are trying to say is that the intention that you have would give those teardrops a sort of a special energies, and they would take different shapes.
Yeah.
So the shape of those tears would be different, of course, when you cry for something that has got a great cause.
Yeah.
Than when you are doing that for a special thing, for something that you didn't get or achieve. So, dear listeners, since we are in the month of Muharram, whenever you have that gathered tears in your eyes, please, please do not forget us from your prayers. And I hope you had enjoyed this session. Thank you for listening. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight. The scars of the US invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan are deep, spanning decades. We will never know how many millions were killed or injured. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written jointly by Amy Goodman and Dennis Moynihan Writers. This article is published under the heading The Other Victims of U.S. Burns Pitts War, the Iraqi and Afghan People. Stay tuned for more. Military veterans and their supporters camped out in front of the U.S. Capitol for close to a week after Republican senators withdrew their support for a major expansion of health care for veterans exposed to toxic burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. Formerly titled the Sergeant First Class Heath Robinson Honoring Our Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act of 2022, the PACT Act targets the Pentagon's reliance on burn pits for disposing of the vast amounts of waste produced during the invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan. Plumes of polluted smoke and particulates from the burn pits injured up to an estimated 3.5 million U.S. service members over the past two decades. After blocking the bill, Senate Republicans faced withering criticism from veterans and their supporters, including renowned comedian Jon Stewart. I'm not sure I've ever seen a situation where people who have already given so much had to fight so hard to get so little, said Stewart, deadly serious, flanked by vets and families of veterans who died from the exposure. Earlier, Stewart assailed the Republicans. Ain't this America heroes who fought in our wars outside, sweating with oxygen, battling all kinds of ailments, while these people sit in their air conditioning, walled off from any of it. They don't have to hear it. They don't have to see it, he said. Stewart wept after the Senate finally passed the bill. Burn pits were used to dispose of everything from trash, tires, paints, and other volatile organic solvents, batteries, unexploded ordnance, petroleum products, plastics, and medical waste, including body parts. These constantly burning dumps were often sited adjacent to barracks. Little or no protective gear was provided for impacted soldiers. Purdue University anthropology professor Kaylee Rubai said on Democracy Now! NewsHour, burn pits are massive incineration fields, sometimes as big as football fields, but there were many smaller ones throughout Iraq and Afghanistan as well. The Department of Veterans Affairs has identified a slew of cancers related to burn pit exposure, along with skin problems, asthma, bronchitis, respiratory, pulmonary, and cardiovascular problems, migraines, and other neurological conditions. These illnesses could have been prevented. The military typically use jet or diesel fuel to burn everything, creating far more pollution than high-temperature incinerators. But using incinerators would have cost more money. Waste disposal was handled by the military contractor Kellogg, Brown & Root, or KBR, a subsidiary of Halliburton. Halliburton's CEO prior to 2001 was Dick Cheney. Cheney then became U.S. vice president and was a key architect of the invasions and occupations of Afghanistan and Iraq. KBR received no-bid contracts to handle an array of logistics for the wars, including waste disposal. KBR chose cheap and dirty burn pits, maximizing profits. "War is a racket," retired U.S. Marine Major General Smelly Butler wrote in 1935. Butler was a career Marine, admitting in a 1931 speech, "I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers," Butler said. "I am a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism." The close to $700 billion appropriated in the PACT Act for the next 10 years will help alleviate some suffering caused by Halliburton's war profiteering, but only for U.S. victims. It won't do a thing for the people in Iraq and Afghanistan. Veterans saw acute short-term exposure to burn pits at peak health at the prime of their lives. Kelly Rubai, who recently returned from the heavily war-impacted Iraqi city of Fallujah, said, "Iraqis face long-term diffuse exposure at all stages of the life course, so the health effects were varied and widespread. Living near U.S. bases in Iraq and therefore near burn pits increased the likelihood of giving birth to a child with a birth defect or of getting cancer. Burn pits are not the biggest figure of environmental and health harm for Iraqis," Professor Rubai elaborated, adding, "They have also been facing military occupation, bombings, shootings, displacements, and layers of military incursion by different occupation forces since the U.S. invasion. These things have all added to collapse in public infrastructure that would be used to contend with the health effects of burn pits, poor overall health, and damaged conditions for farming and fishing." She concluded, "There is one really great way to avoid war-related injury, which is to not go to war." The scars of the U.S. invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan are deep, spanning decades. We will never know how many millions were killed or injured. The United States bears responsibility and owes the survivors reparations, no less than has been pledged belatedly to U.S. veterans.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The leader's viewpoint on Imam Hussein's revolution and Ashura. The pain and suffering which Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his followers endured on the day of Ashura were too agonizing, and the harm which was inflicted was very serious. The life of Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam is more valuable than everything in the world. The pure and sacred lives of those followers of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the lives of those youth and those members of Imam Hussein's household are not comparable to the life of other people. The bodies were covered in blood and dirt. They made sacrifices and they laid down their lives. The households of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and Imam Ali alayhi salam were imprisoned. Those events are very tragic and very different to tolerate. But what was achieved on the day of Ashura was so great and glorious that it made it easy for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, his followers, and his household to endure the sufferings. This has been narrated by prominent figures.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Islamic Ummah should never forget the event of Ashura, which is a lesson and a source of guidance for us. Definitely, Islam is alive because of the event of Ashura and the efforts of Hussein ibn Ali alayhi salam. And I am from Hussein. This narration means that Hussein alayhi salam continued the path of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and he continued to promote Islam after him. If it had not been for the event of Ashura, and if these great sacrifices had not been made in the history of Islam, this valuable experience and this practical lesson would not have been bestowed on the Islamic Ummah, and Islam would have definitely deviated from its path, as many religions before Islam did, and nothing would have remained from it. The greatness of Ashura is because of this. Had it not been for Ashura, had this great sacrifice not been made in the history of Islam, had this lesson not been taught and this experience not offered, Islam would have certainly suffered from deviation like the religions before Islam had suffered from, and nothing would have remained of the truth of Islam and its luminosity.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories says these attacks are illegal and irresponsible. The Israeli regime, however, says they are a preemptive act of self-defense against a Palestinian resistance movement called Islamic Jihad. The occupation forces say the bombardments could last a week, promising more deaths.
As the bodies pile high in the Gaza Strip, emergency protests like this are being held against the Zionist regime's latest onslaught. The pain and anguish is palpable, and with people who have loved ones braving the bombings right now, silence is just not an option.
Two Islamic Jihad commanders have reportedly been killed so far, as have dozens of men, women and children. Palestinians living outside the territories can only pray their loved ones are spared.
Yes, I have three of sisters and I have my mother in Gaza Strip. I try all the time to contact with them, but they told me everything is bad in Gaza Strip. We just scared. The children is very scared, crying all the time.
They don't know if they will live until, like, you know, night or not. They say, if we respond to your call, then you know we are fine. If we don't respond, you have to be scared and you have to call, like, you know, our relative and see if something happened to us.
The West's handling of the Palestinian crisis, juxtaposed with the support Ukraine is getting, has thrown into stark relief the lack of political will on the part of Western governments to heal this decades-old wound.
The Palestinian problem has been going on for decades, and yet it isn't told about in the main press. Our governments do not support it, neither the Tory party or Keir Starmer or any of them, not even Ed Davey. Then none of them of the Liberal Party support what is going on. Why? Because it's more important to sell arms and to have some sort of democracy, they call it, in the Middle East. But what I think is happening is they're using Israel to